Coming up is the news.
The Yemeni army says it has launched a drone and ballistic missile attack on Aramco facilities in eastern Saudi Arabia. More than 100 NGOs and human rights groups are calling for an arms embargo in Israel over its violation of international humanitarian law in Palestinian territories. And head of Lebanon's Supreme Islamic Shia Council, Sheikh Abdul Amir Kabalan, passes away at the age of 85. Good day, everyone. Welcome to World News here in the Iranian capital. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi. Good to have you with us. Now, let's start off with Yemen. The army there is saying it has carried out fresh attacks against Saudi positions in the kingdom's east. Army spokesman says the attacks were carried out using drones and ballistic missiles. General Yahya Saria said that the targets were Aramco oil facilities in Ras Tanura, as well as other locations, including Jeddah on the Red Sea coast. Saudi officials had said earlier that they had intercepted ballistic missiles targeting eastern province as well as the cities of Najran and Jazan in the south. The attacks were in response to years-long Saudi aggression against Yemen. The Saudi-led war has killed tens of thousands of civilians and displaced millions more since 2015. Now, 120 international NGOs and rights groups have signed a petition demanding state parties to the arms trade treaty to impose a comprehensive embargo on all weapons trade with Israel. The NGOs say that countries have a legal and moral obligation to end the regime's use of arms for committing serious violations of international humanitarian law and human rights against Palestinian civilians. The groups say that governments and companies that continue to sell arms to Israel are complicit in the regime's systematic brutality, its war crimes, and crimes against humanity. Now, this comes against the backdrop of Israel's deadly war that killed nearly 250 Palestinians in Gaza in May. It also conducted a deadly crackdown on Al-Quds protests against the regime's illegal seizure of Palestinian land this spring. Now, the head of the Lebanese Supreme Islamic Shia Council, Sheikh Abdul Amir Kabalan, has passed away. He was a prominent cleric, was also instrumental in the political arena. We have a report.
Sheikh Abdul Amir Kabalan, the head of Lebanon's Supreme Islamic Shia Council, has died at the age of 85. He had been hospitalized in recent days following his deteriorating health conditions. He was born in 1936 in one of the villages of Jabal Amil, a region distinguished by its religious seminaries and populated by one of the world's oldest Shia communities. He had a key role in the scientific and political movement in Jabal Amil. When young, he took up religious studies at the seminary in the Iraqi holy city of Najaf. While in Iraq, he was persecuted by the former Baghdad regime of Saddam Hussein. Sheikh Kabalan continued his religious education later on in Damascus and elsewhere, and was educated by some of the top religious figures of the time. In 1994, Sheikh Mohammad Mahdi Shamsuddin was elected president of Lebanon's Supreme Islamic Shia Council, and Sheikh Kabalan was unanimously elected vice president. In 2000, Sheikh Kabalan assumed presidency of the council. He had a close relationship with senior Lebanese cleric Imam Musa Sadr, who founded the Supreme Islamic Shia Council in 1969. Sheikh Kabalan was a staunch advocate of resistance against the Israeli regime. He stressed that any agreement to normalize relations with Tel Aviv is religiously forbidden and would pave the way for the so-called Deal of the Century initiative proposed by the U.S. and aimed at dealing a blow to the issue of Palestine. He had called on Arab nations to neutralize any such deals and underlined the need to boycott Israeli goods. He was an influential figure in Lebanon's religious and political arenas during his lifetime.
Okay, we started this news broadcast by news from Yemen. The army announcing that it has carried out fresh attacks against Saudi positions in the kingdom's east. We had the army spokesman saying that drones were used and the Aramco oil facilities and some other targets were hit. Now, from Sana'a, the Yemeni's capital, I'm joined by Hussein al-Bukhaiti. He is an activist and political commentator. Good to have you with us, Hussein. So this seems to be a major operation, doesn't it?
Yes, as Al-Amid Sari' has announced today, they have targeted one of the largest Saudi oil facility, which is Ras Tanura port in the Persian Gulf. That port almost export 70% to 80% of Saudi oil and gas and other chemical stuff. That's why I think this using 8 drones and a ballistic missile to target only that side, the scene that the focus could be now on the Saudi oil infrastructure, because with Saudi oil, with Saudi money, they can get all the support from country like the United States, Britain, and France. And with that money, they buy all type of weapons. They buy the United Nations, actually. And that's why to focus on those oil facility, I think that Yemeni forces can bring down Saudi to its knee. And as well, they have target Aramco facility in Najran and Jizan and in Jeddah. This means that it is clear message that the Yemeni ballistic drone unit and ballistic Yemeni drone unit and ballistic missile unit can actually cover all Saudi Arabia from Dammam to Jeddah to Najran to Jizan to Asir. And in this latest statement from Al-Amid Sari', he has not actually mentioned what type of military site Yemeni army has conducted attack on. He only mentioned the economic side. And I think that this Saudi Arabia should learn that when Yemeni army actually in the last 3 months, they have conducted only a few small attack on Abha airport. They were just trying to give time if there is any peace, if the Omani negotiation and Omani will help to bring Yemeni side and Saudi side to talk to the table. But this actually shows that when Yemeni army conduct this major and huge attack, this actually explain clearly that there is no any good coming from this talk and the negotiation led by Oman.
Okay, thank you very much for that. Hussein al-Bukhaiti, activist and the political commentator in Sana'a. Now we have Iraqis holding a funeral for senior Shia cleric Grand Ayatollah Sayyid Muhammad Said al-Hakim. Mourners converged on the holy city of Najaf on Sunday to bid farewell to the eminent religious figure. He will be laid to rest there. A similar procession was held in the city of Karbala on Saturday. The top cleric passed away at the age of 87. He was among 4 prominent religious figures in Iraq. It thought at the religious seminary of Najaf alongside top cleric Grand Ayatollah Ali al-Sistani. Now, 13 policemen have been killed in an attack on a checkpoint near the northern city of Kirkuk. Security sources saying that the attack took place just after midnight on Sunday. They blame it on Daesh terrorists. Terrorist cells regularly target the Iraqi army and police in that area, but this one was one of the deadliest this year. Now, Iran has launched the third and final phase of clinical tests of a local COVID-19 vaccine. The jab, that's called RaziCovPars, is one of the COVID vaccines indigenously developed by Iranian experts. Some 40,000 people have volunteered to receive the shot during the last phase. Health officials also saying that the vaccine is safe. It has been produced based on international standards. They say that the health ministry will authorize the RaziCovPars for emergency use if it proves efficient enough to immunize recipients against COVID-19. Iran has already rolled out its first coronavirus shot. That's called the Coviran variant. Let's now take a look at developments in Afghanistan. Heavy clashes are raging in Panjshir province, where the Taliban are trying to take out the last pockets of resistance against their takeover of the country last month. The Taliban say that they have advanced deep into the Panjshir Valley north of Kabul. The spokesman says advancing forces have captured 4 of the province's 7 districts and are inching closer to the center. Opposition forces, however, reject the claim, saying that they have confronted the Taliban. The National Resistance Front of Afghanistan, led by local leader Ahmad Massoud, says it has surrounded thousands of Taliban forces. And a Facebook post, Massoud insists that Panjshir will continue to stand strong. Kabul correspondent Amin Alami joined us earlier with the latest on the situation in Afghanistan's Panjshir Valley. Let's see what he had to tell us.
Intense fightings are underway between the Northern Resistance Front and the Taliban, who have surrounded the entire Panjshir province and northeast of Kabul. The Panjshir province has at least seven districts, and the Taliban are claiming that we have captured four out of these seven districts of Kiev province in northern Afghanistan. But according to Fahim Dashti, who is one of the spokespersons of Northern Resistance Front, that is led by Ahmed Massoud, who himself is the son of the legendary Afghan commander Ahmed Shah Massoud, said that the Northern Resistance Front has captured alive nearly 1,000 Taliban fighters who had entered Panjshir province via a very strategic pass from Baghlan province.
The United States is facing criticism over the manner it withdrew its troops from Afghanistan. Washington's superpower status is being questioned by its closest ally, Britain. And what does that mean for the U.S., its strategic partners, and the rest of the world? It appears there are cracks in the U.S. military adventurism with its closest allies, including the EU.
Weeks after the Taliban swept to power in Afghanistan, the world is still evaluating the results of the West's 20-year-long war in the country. The United States have faced criticism over its messy withdrawal from Afghanistan and its achievements in the Central Asian country. The unexpectedly rapid fall of the Afghan capital, the scenes of chaos at the Kabul International Airport where hundreds of people desperate to leave the country had gathered, and the bomb attack claimed by the Daesh terror group that killed over 170 people, including 13 U.S. troops, have all raised questions about the U.S. military superiority. That's an issue British Defense Secretary Ben Wallace raised in an interview with The Spectator magazine.
It's obvious that Britain is not a superpower, but a superpower that is also not prepared to stick at something isn't probably a superpower either. It is certainly not a global force, it's just a big power.
This wasn't the first time that the British Defense Secretary has criticized Washington, a close UK ally. Back in August, he said former US President Donald Trump's decision to clinch a deal with the Taliban was a mistake.
I would say if it's a superpower or not is pretty irrelevant. The United States is still the greatest danger facing the world and the greatest concentration of private power against our species that has ever existed.
While the U.S. threatens military action against nations it deems its adversaries, including Iran, Russia, and China, it appears that more Washington allies are beginning to take up the opinion that America has lost its superpower status.
Well, billions of dollars was spent, thousands of lives were lost during the 20-year war, but it could not change the facts on the ground in Afghanistan the way that the U.S. had intended to. The aftermath of the U.S. Civil War and its failures are leading some European nations, like the U.K., to reconsider forming a new military force without relying on Washington.
Good afternoon.
Earlier this year, U.S. President Joe Biden announced the August 31st deadline for the withdrawal of American troops from Afghanistan as a means to uphold the 2020 deal reached between former President Donald Trump's administration and the Taliban in the Qatari capital, Doha. But the withdrawal of American forces from the country meant that all U.S. allies had to follow suit, regardless of whether they intended to do so, as they depended on U.S. logistics and air support, as well as the safe evacuation of their citizens. The developments in recent weeks have reignited the debate about the formation of a European Rapid Response Force.
And I think it's clear that the need for more European defense has never been as much as evident as today after the events in Afghanistan. Sometimes something happens that pushes the history. It creates a breakthrough. And I think that the Afghanistan events of this summer is one of these cases.
The EU has been working on that. It was positioned for us, 4 years ago as, well, Trump is an unreliable ally. See what he's doing. He's driving the Europeans to do this. But as a matter of fact, that project was under construction before Trump.
In an interview earlier this year, German Defense Minister Annegret Kramp-Karrenbauer questioned the bloc's strategic autonomy from the United States. Her comments drew fierce criticism from French President Emmanuel Macron, who believes in the bloc's so-called strategic autonomy.
You know, Europe, with its colonial history, it's certainly, you know, not good news to find out that they're building a new army of their own again, because that has never meant anything good for the people in the rest of the world. But the fact that there is maybe another challenger being lifted up and presented to Washington, that's, I think, a healthy development.
But the question now is what it will take for the European-U.S. allies to turn their ideas into action and seek independence from Washington.
Okay, let's move on with the rest of this news broadcast. A top Venezuelan official has signaled the government and the opposition have reached partial agreements to resolve the country's political crisis. Parliament Speaker Jorge Rodriguez made the announcement after a second round of talks with an opposition delegation in Mexico. Opposition Representative Gerardo Blight also said that both sides are working on early agreements. Negotiations mediated by Norway have a seven-point agenda, including easing Western sanctions on the government of President Maduro, as well as political rights and electoral guarantees for the opposition. Venezuela's main opposition bloc has announced that it would end a three-year election boycott and take part in the November local polls. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
Tell a little about yourself.
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of first to six. My dad, who taught me the art of life.
Listeners special.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful, salam and warmest greetings to you, dear listeners, and welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, September 5th, 2021. I'm Atefa Erfani hosting this program today. Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through emails, letters, and messages. So contact us and tell us what you think about our broadcast. If you have any messages for our listeners around the world, then record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. Remember, dear listeners, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. Please keep us company until the end of the program. Welcome back to your program. This is Listeners Special. And for your information, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. These reception reports are very important and useful to us in IRIB English Radio, especially to our technicians and engineers. These reception reports, as you may know, enable us to provide a better service to our listeners around the world. All of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving an EQSL card from us. And here I truly appreciate those of our listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports, including Mizanur Rahman from Bangladesh. Mizanur Rahman is one of our regular listeners. Also, we have reception reports from Ismo Kapi from Finland and another reception report from Harald Seuss, one of our regular listeners from Austria. And a million thanks to those of our listeners who have kindly sent us emails from around the world, which I mentioned some of their names here, and later during the program I will read their emails or letters, including Eddie Witanto from Indonesia, who has sent us an email. Eddie is one of our regular listeners. Bashir A. Ahmad from Algeria has sent us an email. Marek Pis from Poland has sent us an email. And we have another email from Canada, and this email is from Chris Malbo, one of our regular listeners. And the last but not the least is an email from Reinhard Klein Arendt from Germany. A million thanks for sending us these emails, dear listeners. So, after a short break, I will be back with all these kind messages. Stay tuned. Welcome back. This is an email from Indonesia, from one of our regular listeners in this country, Indonesia, from Eddie Witanto. Eddie says, firstly, let me send you my greetings from Jakarta. Thank you for your email. Day by day, I tune in to the IRIB English Radio because many topics and issues about Iranian culture and society and Islamic teachings are presented in the programs, and they are very interesting. I hope to receive a printed QSL card soon, because as a long-time shortwave listener, I still prefer the printed QSL card instead of EQSL. Best regards from Indonesia. Salam and warmest greetings to you, Eddie Witanto from Indonesia, and many thanks for sending us this kind and really amazing email from your region, from Jakarta. We are really happy that our signals are received in your region, in Jakarta, Indonesia. Thank you very much for sending us this email. So, that's great that you listen to IRIB English Radio every day. As you said, day by day, you tune in to IRIB English Radio. And it seems that you are very much interested in topics and issues about Iranian culture and society and Islamic teachings. That's great. This gives us motivation to continue our way and to provide the best service, the best kind of programs for our dear listeners around the world. So, you prefer paper QSL card, and as you may know, right now, at the time of pandemic, this is not possible to send you paper QSL cards. Maybe after the pandemic, we will send our dear listeners printed QSL cards and the souvenirs of IRIB English Radio, the promotional items. So please, for the time being, wait for an eQSL cards. And best regards from Iran, Eddie Witanto from Indonesia. Write to us soon and tell us your views about IRIB English Radio programs. And from Algeria, from Africa, we have an email from Bashir A. Ahmad. Bashir A. Ahmad from Algeria says, "Hello, dear IRIB English Radio staff. My name is Bashir, and I have to say that I like many things about your culture, and as I have read before, Iranians have a very deep and rich and long existing history. I hope that I can visit Iran and see the beauties of your country very soon, hopefully, after the corona pandemic is over. Thank you all." Salam and warmest greetings to you, Bashir A. Ahmad from Algeria. And I do express my appreciations to you for sending us this email. That's great. It seems that you like the programs about the culture of Iran, as you said. You have learned many things about the culture of Iran, and you described the Iranian culture as a very deep and rich and long existing thing and its history. So, you'd like to visit Iran and see the beauties of Iran, but as you may know, at the time of pandemic, it's not possible. So, you can listen and refer to IRIB English Radio to listen to programs about the culture and history of Iran, including a series called Close Up Iran. I think this program best and most describes the Iranian culture and touristic attractions of Iran. Of course, we have other programs too, and we have the archives of these programs in our website. So you can refer to our website at www.parstoday.com/yen. And there you can find different programs about the culture of Iran. Anyway, Bashir A. Ahmad from Algeria, many thanks for writing this email to IRIB English Radio. Write to us soon and tell us your views about our programs. Well, dear listeners, after a short break, I will be back with other emails and letters from around the world. Welcome back. Here we have an email from Poland. This email is from Marek Peace from Poland. Marek says, "Dear IRIB English Radio, greetings from Poland. Thank you very much for the EQSL. I sent my new reception reports and listened to your programs from southeast of Poland in a city called Rzeszów. If my report is correct, please confirm it and send me the detailed EQSL. It would be also great to receive other items such as shortwave broadcast times and frequencies, stickers, and other materials. I'm waiting for your answer. Thank you. Best regards in 73. Salam and warmest greetings to you, Marek Peace from Poland. And warm gratitudes to you for sending us this email. So it seems that you have tuned into IRIB English radio programs. And we are so happy that you were able to receive the signals of IRIB English Radio in your region and in your country, Poland. Yes, my colleagues will soon send you EQSL card, and it seems that you like these EQSLs, as you may know. We had the tradition of sending our dear listeners paper QSL cards, but at the time of pandemic, we are sending you these EQSL cards. Maybe after the pandemic, we soon send our dear listeners the promotional items and paper QSL cards, but right now enjoy them, the EQSL cards. So Marek Peace from Poland. Write to us soon and tell us your views about our programs. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. Here from Canada, we have an email from one of our regular listeners, from Chris Malboff. Yes, this email is from Chris Malboff, who says, "Hello and greetings from British Columbia, Canada. Hope this email finds you well. I haven't been able to listen to your station in quite some time, but I am just returning to becoming a regular listener of your radio. Have a good day and have a good week ahead, and stay safe during this pandemic. Salam and warmest greetings to you, Chris Malvo from Canada." You were not able to listen to IRIB English Radio sometime, but we are so happy that you have just returned to become a regular listener of IRIB English Radio. So why don't you tell us your reason? I wish you could tell us the reason why you were not able to listen to IRIB English Radio. What was the reason? Anyway, we're so happy that you have come back to become a regular listener of IRIB English Radio. Of course, many thanks for your best wishes to IRIB English Radio staff. We wish everyone health and safety in the time of pandemic. So, Chris Malboff from Canada, now that you are a regular listener of IRIB English Radio, write to us soon and tell us which programs you like the best. After a short break, I will be back with an email from Germany from Reinhard Klein Arendt. Stay with us, please. Welcome back. Here, as I said, we have an email from Reinhard Klein Arendt from Germany. Reinhard says, "My name is Reinhard and I am from Bergheim near Cologne. I am a medium wave enthusiast. I try to listen to stations as far away as possible. Last week I heard for the first time your station. When I heard a station for the first time, I sent out a reception report in which I told about reception quality of the station signal here in Germany, accomplished by an MP3 clip with a recording of that station to prove reception. At the same time, I asked for confirmation that the details of that report are correct and that I really received the station. Will it be possible for you to listen to the clip attached? That is about 35 seconds, and to notify me whether I really received your radio? Thanks a lot. By the way, in 2018, I visited Iran 2 times. I made long travels in Iran, visiting Shiraz, Isfahan, Yazd, Persepolis, and other nice places. I received much hospitality of the Iranian people. Thank you for that. Best regards. Salam and warmest greetings to you, Reinhard Klein Arendt from Germany. And many thanks for writing to us. So, it's the first time that you received the signals of IRIB English Radio. That's great. And we hope that you become a regular listener of IRIB English Radio. So, my colleagues have verified the details of your report and will soon send you an EQSL to you. It was amazing. You said in 2018, that is before the coronavirus pandemic, you visited Iran 2 times. That's great. So, was it on touristic purposes or, as you know, for something professional? Related to your profession, it seems that it was for touristic reasons, because you visited the most some of the most beautiful cities of Iran, including Shiraz, Isfahan, Yazd, and Persepolis. Is a relic, is a monument located in the city of Shiraz, and that's so beautiful. So you visited all these beautiful places in Iran, then that's great. And I have a suggestion for you. Now that you are not able to visit these beautiful places in Iran and the beautiful culture, history, and cities of Iran at the time of pandemic, you can refer to IRIB English Radio, and there you can listen to different programs about Iranian culture and history from the tongue of our anchors and radio announcers. And that's great. Reinhard Klein, RN from Germany, we hope that after the pandemic you visit Iran soon. So, Reinhard, many thanks for writing this email. Write to us soon and tell us your views about IRB English radio programs. Dearly says, I think we have to skip to the next section of our program. That is this week's interview, which is conducted with one of our regular listeners. Please take a listen.
Yes, my name's Christopher Lewis. I've been a listener to the IRIB English radio for nearly 16, 17 years, probably a little bit longer now. I'm just interested in shortwave broadcasts in general, Iran in particular, and events in and around the Middle East. I've just had a general interest in shortwave for a long, long time, and very interested in cultures as well. Well, first and foremost, with IRIB, I like listening to the news. That's one feature I've always looked forward to listening to, and also news commentaries, because it's not just international news, it's regional and local news that I'm interested in, and IRIB for me delivers that. It's concise, the news is put together very, very well, it's gathered very well, it's accurate, and also other programs afterwards, news analysis, commentary about events in general, world events, and Iran's view on what's happening in the world, not only close to home, but also around the globe itself. I also enjoy listeners' programs and to find out what other listeners think of IRIB and what other stations they listen to, what their view is on Iran and Iran's views about the world. Yes, I would just encourage everybody to carry on tuning into IRIB, sending your reception reports, which I know are very useful to the station itself, and just carry on sending letters of support and interest and learning more about Iran and such a wonderful country it is, because it's got a lot of culture to offer, and one day it's on my bucket list to visit. I'd love to come and visit Iran.
Wishing you all the best, we wrap up this week's edition of Listeners Special. Please keep in touch with IRIB English Radio and goodbye.
Listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to EnglishRadio@irib.ir. That is one word, EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pasttoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00982122013720. Once again, our phone number is 00982122013720. 3720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all for being with RIB English Radio.
Bring us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of instrument.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, the United States is anything but united these days. Inside the country lies much discontent and a major divide. And outside the country, even Washington's allies are starting to say that the U.S. hegemony is waning rapidly, especially after the Afghanistan debacle. Are we looking at the beginning of the end of the American empire? Or are we rapidly approaching its dissolution? Stay with us as we take a look at all of this and more on this Spotlight.
Weeks after the Taliban swept to power in Afghanistan, the world is still evaluating the results of the West's 20-year-long war in the country. The United States have faced criticism over its messy withdrawal from Afghanistan and its achievements in the Central Asian country. The unexpectedly rapid fall of the Afghan capital, the scenes of chaos at the Kabul International Airport where hundreds of people desperate to leave the country had gathered, and the bomb attack claimed by the Daesh terror group that killed over 170 people, including 13 U.S. troops, have all raised questions about the U.S. military superiority. That's an issue British Defense Secretary Ben Wallace raised in an interview with The Spectator magazine.
It's obvious that Britain is not a superpower, but a superpower that is also not prepared to stick at something isn't probably a superpower either. It is certainly not a global force, it's just a big power.
This wasn't the first time that the British Defense Secretary has criticized Washington, a close UK ally. Back in August, he said former U.S. President Donald Trump's decision to clinch a deal with the Taliban was a mistake.
I would say if it's a superpower or not is pretty irrelevant. The United States is still the greatest danger facing the world and the greatest concentration of private power against our species that has ever existed.
While the U.S. threatens military action against nations it deems its adversaries, including Iran, Russia, and China, it appears that more Washington allies are beginning to take up the opinion that America has lost its superpower status.
I'd like to welcome my guests to the Spotlight, Senior Analyst, Foreign Policy and Focus, Ian Williams out of New York. And journalist and political analyst Elijah Matnia out of Brussels.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Thank you both for being with us. Let's start this off with Ian in New York. Ian, do you think that the U.S. is waning? And if so, when do you think this actually started? Some say from 1971 when gold no longer backed the dollar. Others say since the U.S. invaded Afghanistan and Iraq. I mean, what's your assessment of this overall?
It's very difficult to say. Oh, it's been waning almost the minute it was established, because people successfully stood against it. You could say that the Vietnamese victory against the U.S. was a clear signal, but it was definitely at its height after the fall of the Berlin Wall, after the fall of the Soviet Union, and with the Iraq War. The U.S. was unchallenged internationally. Even its enemies didn't really dare go against it. That's been eroded totally. But what happened in Afghanistan was not significant in economic or military terms. It was significant in terms of prestige, which, as far as global diplomacy is concerned, is almost as important. But people are still going to think twice before they challenge the U.S. They still have hugely disproportionate armed forces. They still have hugely disproportionate financial support. Less so than it was, and it's definitely waning, and a lot less quickly than some of us would have hoped, perhaps. But it's also got rising, it's got rising rivals, in particular China. I don't really think that Russia is one of the major rivals. It's Russia is sort of Saudi Arabia with nuclear weapons. It doesn't have a massive economy, but it does have this residual armed forces and nuclear weapons. China is a rising power in every sense, and obviously the U.S. is scared about it. But once again, the U.S. isn't unrivaled there, and China can't really exploit the U.S.'s weakness, because one of the reasons why China has been rising is because it sells so much of its goods to the United States, and it borrows so much money from the United States, it lends so much money to the United States. So they're inextricably bound together. It's not a straight one-on-one superpower confrontation like Moscow and Washington in what you might say the bad old days, when they really didn't have that much to do with each other. There was almost minimal contact in culturally, financially, and other ways. But the United States is a victim of its own failures.
Stay with me. We're going to talk about the reasons for this, but let me get Elijah in on this conversation. Now, American political scientist Francis Fukuyama says that the truth of the matter is that the end of the American era had come much earlier. The long-term sources of American weakness and decline are more domestic than international. What do you think about that?
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming.
The decline of the U.S. forces started not when the U.S. was engaged in war, like in Lebanon 1982 or 1983, in Iraq in 2003, in Syria 2011. It is, what is the outcome of all these wars? Of course, the U.S. has the strongest military machine and military power, but what is the result of this machine? Winning the ground and then not be able to hold it. It's exactly the same as ISIS is able today to attack small villages and win and then withdraw. But the U.S. is able to stay for much longer, for many years, and then being kicked out and forced to withdraw. The moment the Americans sit with the Taliban and negotiate a peace deal is the moment of the decline and the defeat of the U.S. after 20 years. So there is no point for the U.S. to have so much the mighty military power when the result is very slim at the end of the day. So yes, it is a decline of the empire. It is the rising of other forces, that not only are rival, but also are defying the U.S. and challenging the U.S. Forces, even if they don't stand to the exact U.S. Military power, and they have a minor force. But however, they can and they are able to defy the U.S., like we've seen that in Iran, we've seen that in Syria, we've seen that in Lebanon, and we've seen that in Iraq, even a small group. And the Taliban managed to stand against the Americans and force the withdrawal. So, yes, I think the U.S. Defense Secretary is quite right by saying it is just a big power, but it's a big power not able to reach the end, achieve anything at the end of the day.
Okay, well, Ian, there have always been different opinions in the U.S., like most places, but it was magnified greatly during the Trump era. How divided do you actually think the country is currently?
It's extremely divided. And I just want to add that the people who brought you the Iraq War were the people behind the Project for the New American Century. And they foresaw this precisely. In their own way, they were clear-sighted. They said America was declining economically, and so they had to cement in a military advantage now to ensure their hegemony over the next few years. And they're proved entirely right, apart from the fact of being hopelessly optimistic. And what we're seeing now is there's always been a problem with American foreign policy. It's never been, it's never been joined up. It's a result of different lobbies of forces within there. It's almost Byzantine in the way that the State Department, the Pentagon, the military industrial contractors, the politicians representing the lobbies, where they kick things around until it comes. And then, in the past, you had the State Department acting like a gyroscope and saying, well, yes, you might want that, but international law says no. Jerusalem is not Israel's capital. Or international law says no, Western Sahara is not part of Morocco, no matter what the President of the United States says. But that type of moderating influence is almost gone, because one of the things that Trump and the ideologues did was to wage a complete war against the State Department and the more rational aspects of the American foreign policy establishment. So in that sense, what Joe Biden has done is entirely rational. He said, we can't win in Afghanistan. Afghanistan is not one of our essential, it's not one of our essential fields of operation for the United States. The United States interests are not inextricably bound up there. Prestige might be, but we can live with their prestige. We're still the biggest military in the world. And then, the old story about sticks and stones may break my bones, but the names will never be okay. I'm not the big superpower. Try anything on me and see what I do. It's a rational position that Biden has taken, but it is symbolic of American decline and the decline of the decision-making apparatus, that universally the political, military, and intelligence people let Biden down so thoroughly that he did not know that the Taliban had basically entered into an agreement and they bought the Afghan army wholesale on the ground, unit by unit.
You talked about that it's the logical thing to do, the rational thing to do. I think probably the question, though, for the American people and much of the world would be the way that they did what they did and why that they leave in the way that they did and cause such chaos. And what does that do to the American psyche itself? Because the American people, first of all, don't like to believe that they've been beaten, that they've lost the war, number one. And second of all, they don't like to hear that some have been left behind and basically American troops are running out of Afghanistan. I mean, what has that done in general for the American psyche inside of the country?
The American psyche, as far as I can see, is completely unflappable. Really, they really don't care. Afghanistan is a faraway country with a strange-sounding name, and most Americans are just happy to get out of there. Some of them might see it as a blot on their escutcheon, but another way of looking at it, if you're being rational, bearing in mind that it was a completely unprecedented collapse, that was the real failure, the fact that that wasn't anticipated. The the U.S. showed its power. It got out, tens, hundreds, over 100,000 people in a very short time from allegedly a hostile territory with very few casualties and very few left behind. It's shameful, but actually that shame is mostly brought on by the Trump people who brought about the debacle to begin with, who are picking on Biden for partisan points. I'm not a fan of Biden, but this was one of the more rational things, and a lot of what he's been accused of goes squarely back to Donald Trump and the Republicans who started this thing. Now, okay. Biden was one of the cheerleaders for those foreign adventures as part of the sort of neocon conspiracy to defend Israel. But on this particular aspect, he was clear-sighted. We couldn't win in Afghanistan. We have to get out.
Elijah, your assessment of it all, and what do you see as the main causes of the U.S.'s deterioration?
I think there are many points here. It is not only the rush that the U.S. left Afghanistan. It is only it's also the behavior toward the allies. I mean, here Europe is under shock to see how the U.S. withdrew without even consulting Europe, and the way they withdrew without talking to the allies. And this is why we're here today to talk about the necessity to form a European army, which is very early, and I don't know where this is going to lead us. However, the reason why the U.S. felt in such a hurry to leave is because they had a wrong information, a wrong assessment of the army that they have trained, and they had a very high expectation.
How does that happen? Sorry to jump in here, Elijah. I mean, how does that happen? You say wrong assessment. 20 years. 20 years on the ground, 20 years American troops working or being side by side with Afghan troops, obviously evaluating the situation. How do you get it so wrong after 20 years?
Because the Americans make mistakes after mistakes. This is not the first time. And when because they lack also the understanding of the culture, they made this mistake in Iraq severely, and they did it again in Afghanistan, when they expected to see the Afghan army engage in a civil war against other Afghani while they are negotiating with them in Qatar and delivering the country back to the Taliban. And they expect the army to fight and give them just 6 months' time so they can pull out all the Americans and the Afghan collaborators. And they say, done, we are out, and now you can continue fighting until you kill each other, and Taliban will again overwhelm all the army that we've trained for 20 years. This is a real failure that we've seen also in Iraq in 2014, where they've trained the army for 11 years, and the Iraqi army crumbled in just 3 days in Mosul and in the north of Iraq. It is not only the failure of the intelligence services, it is not the lack of visibility and right assessment, it is not only the non-understanding of the state and the local culture. It is just everything was going wrong. And because they think, the American think, we can import our culture anywhere we go, this is fundamentally wrong. They are never going to change the culture of a country, and it's never going to be customized to the Americans' culture and mentality. Nobody asked the Americans to come, and nobody asked, and they were forced to leave. After 20 years, they removed the Taliban in 2001 to give back the power in 2021 again to the Taliban.
Ian, even during a pandemic and health crisis, we have seen anything but solidarity in the way the American society has approached the issue. I mean, do you attribute this to a major mistrust by many of their leadership overall? And how does this affect the whole, the schism that has come about inside of the country? Is there overall mistrust for the leadership?
Well, I mean, you quoted at the beginning Francis Fukuyama, who wrote just before the end of the Cold War about after the end of the Cold War about the end of history, when in fact history had just restarted where it was left off in 1914. And to give him his due, Francis Fukuyama has admitted he was wrong about that thesis. And here, in effect, we're seeing the American Civil War still continuing after 160 years. I mean, the issues of race and privilege and culture are still hugely predominant here. I mean, we have Texas just passed an act which basically encourages vigilantism against women. We have almost post-Reconstruction states legislatures all over the South enacting legislation that makes it almost impossible for minorities and poor people to vote.